Hello and welcome to this latest episode in Season 3 of the Multi-Channel Success Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Episode 2 from Season 3 of the Multi-Channel Success Podcast. I'm David Conn and I'm here today with my regular companion, Mark Pinkerton from Prospero.
Hello.
And with our special guest, Abby Huff from UU3. Our subject today is why your conversion rate optimization obsession is obsolete, or is it? Abby is a specialist in this area. Why don't you tell us, Abby, who you are and what you've done in this area?
Hello there. So I'm Abby. I have been a consultant for, about 20 years now. And my focus is basically trying to find things, for want of a better word, that affect your conversion rate or hinder some your users on your website. So it covers everything from usability to accessibility, opportunities that are not being taken advantage of, a whole plethora of different things. But my primary focus and the thing that I am most interested about is users and what makes them tick, and how we can build relationships with them. So a whole host of different things, in fact, all the things that make up optimization are in my wheelhouse. So that's kind of my focus.
Fantastic. And Mark, tell us a little bit about your background and how it helps with this topic.
Yeah, so I started in, I think, what would broadly be called the CRO world in about 2005 with an optimization agency called Logan Todd. And I spent 7 years there as the whole process of CRO was developed. I think we were fairly close to the cutting edge of CRO at the time. And then carried that over for 4 years in the same team within PwC. So I've had 11 years in this world. So that kind of underpins an awful lot of my thinking and the way that I approach things, even as I take a more strategic view on things now.
Fantastic. Okay, so you both obviously know a lot about conversion rate optimization. So why don't we start by getting a definition of what is CRO today? Abby?
It's not what it used to be. if we, if you want a CRO, conversion rate optimization, then I guess in the early days, it kind of all focused on exactly that, right? Getting people through a funnel to make a purchase. That was the only thing that mattered, the conversion rate of the website. Right?
Absolutely.
But I think it's probably changed a lot from that. And we see a lot of banter on LinkedIn about what the terminology should be. But in my view, it's definitely a lot more than just conversion rate as a single metric. It's about understanding who you're dealing with, who you're trying to sell to, making that journey as easy as possible that you can for them, and just generally, trying to understand what makes people tick. So it's not just about one single metric on a website. There are a whole host of other things that you can look at in order to optimize. So it's definitely had its own evolution, I would say, from where we were 20 years ago, even 5 years ago. I think it has changed considerably.
Thank you. And Mark, what have you seen in terms of the way our understanding of what CRO is has changed?
I think having a conversion rate focus in the early days was very important because it showed the potential for the website to an audience, all of whom we were all learning on the job at the same time. So clients were learning in terms of their e-com platform, making it work. And we were learning as analysts and CRO specialists in terms of what worked and what didn't work. As time's gone on, that knowledge has been shared broadly. Therefore, there's kind of a base layer of understanding, one hopes, within the industry. However, when people talk about conversion rate as a focus, the easiest thing to do in the world is to improve your conversion rate just by turning off all your ad traffic, and then you suddenly
just keep the organic stuff, right?
Yeah, and then your conversion rate will jump. Yep. However, that's not in the long term interest of the client, or even the short term interest of the client. So, it's about understanding holistically how all of this stuff works, particularly in an e-com world where you have a very good metric as a conversion. Your sale is your conversion, but you can clearly conversion rate optimization has gone much wider than purely e-com. And it has morphed into this general understanding and driving to change and improve things. So performance optimization is where it's at in my head. How that differs from experimentation, I think we'll come on to later.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so thank you for those definitions and giving us a little bit of the history. I guess, you know, we put a deliberately controversial headline onto this podcast. I guess that from my perspective, I look at CRO and I think, hasn't all the functionality been done? You know, don't we know how to build a good website nowadays? The days when you could change the colour of a button or change the way the product pages, hasn't that all been done? Aren't websites all pretty good now? Abby?
No.
Okay. That's blunt.
If you want the blunt answer, I think we know what we're doing, but actually we don't. Part of my work is auditing websites to understand where the opportunities are. And I can tell you every website that I audit, there will be at least 100, 150 different things that are broken, are stupid from a usability point of view, do not make any sense, are confusing. And, you know, I still can't believe that I am still in the business of doing this, which obviously counters your point that people know what we're doing, because we don't. There are still many, many examples of where we have fallen short of the mark on so many different areas.
Yeah, I completely agree. I completely agree with that. But I think one of the causes of that, or the multiple causes of it, one is that it's actually much harder to take an overview of the digital estate now than it was. Things are far more complicated. They're more technical. And also you've got this whole thing of, you know, when we grew up, there were one or two people who actually had an overview of the whole website, webmasters they used to be called. And now you've got to a whole world where people specialize in SEO or PPC much earlier in their, or e-com, much earlier in their career. But it means that they don't see the whole picture because they focused too early.
Indeed, I think we're back into the the big needing to see the bigger picture. Probably in the old days, conversion rate optimization was a very specific discipline, but I guess now it has to be seen as part of the wider picture. Would you see that, Abby?
Yes, I do, and I think probably the advantage of having somebody like myself come in and look at a website, it does give you a fresh set of eyes on something. So, you know, if you're dealing with one website, you are looking at that website day in and day out from, you know, perhaps many different facets. And much like banner blindness on websites, you get the same thing with your own product, right? You don't see the problems. You develop shortcuts to do things on your own website because you're using it every single day. But what you're not doing is viewing it from the point of perhaps somebody who comes onto that website for the first time and they're looking at it and they're thinking, I have no idea what I'm supposed to be doing here. I don't understand what is being sold. I don't understand how I find what I'm even looking for. You know, what is this checkout? Do I even trust it? So I think when you're working on a website for a long period of time, you get a degree of complacency about what that website should be doing in terms of you to optimize it or to, for want of a better word, increase your conversion rate. But let's avoid that for the time being.
So
I think it's important that you do have people come in and make you accountable for the thing that you have created, because 9 times out of 10 it is a Frankenstein.
But if you look at, I don't know, fashion websites, for example, then there's a large degree of commonality across fashion websites. And then if you have a site that works in a different way, it stands out. If you look at something like Paul Smith, which has just gone onto the Sentra platform, they've carried their design over, but some of the way that it works is unusual, and that has standout. But whether or not that helps from a conversion rate optimization is a completely different guess. One would have to have access to the data to know. I guess my point is that people tend to follow exemplars of people they think are successful and ape the layout of those websites without necessarily understanding what drives performance.
Absolutely. Well, I think, and I always think, Abby, your point about getting a fresh perspective. I remember when we first met, we did a piece of work at Heels. We were obsessed by a particular piece of functionality and really wanted to test it. And when we presented our product page to the customers, they barely touched the piece of functionality, this complex thing we'd created. They were all about the product carousel. And if I hadn't seen it with my own eyes,
you wouldn't have believed
I would never have believed it. And it completely changed the way that we looked at our product page design. So I can vouch for getting a fresh pair of eyes.
The one thing that working in this world taught me was that no matter how much experience you think you might have,
you know nothing.
You will be wrong. And that is a fundamental difference, I think, in the way that people who come up this way think. Whereas if you haven't been in this world, you're going to think you know what you're doing. So, I know that I don't know what I'm doing, but I think I have a better starting point to learn.
And oftentimes I will get, somebody will say to me, you know, I've got this thing and I want to improve it, but the higher-ups are not interested. They say it's a waste of time, but I've got all this research. And my one piece of advice to them is to plonk them into a user testing session, observing it. Because really, for me, that is the best part of the job, is getting somebody to realise that there is a real problem when they think there is none. And a user testing session is absolutely the best way to do that. Practical examples. I have sat in client meetings where they have insisted there's nothing wrong with their mobile experience, and then give them an Android phone, because of course they're all iPhone users, and say, okay, you accomplished this task. And of course they can't do it. Yes, I've set it up to a degree, but to get them to have that realization, to experience that struggle for real life, it's a big game changer. I think that's a top tip for people to take away.
Thank you. And I think where we've got to so far is, okay, the obsession with conversion rate itself, I think we're saying you've got to look at a broader picture. Yeah. And we've said that CRO has evolved probably into something called performance optimization. So I think we're probably agreed that it isn't obsolete.
No, I think it's inherent, and the value of CRO underpins the way that you think about things. If you're getting to longer term metrics away from conversion rate onto customer lifetime value or profitability or some other KPIs, then that's well and good, although customer lifetime value is really hard to test against. One of the things, and because I've come up this way, one of the examples I just want to mention to listeners is that on the Prospero website, we have a performance gap model where people can play with their funnel and end up looking at their profitability of their business. You know, what the impact of the CRO changes would be in terms of profitability. And from our point of view, that's a useful tool for converting the high-ups to the value of doing this sort of work.
Excellent.
Yeah,
okay.
And that's a big selling, isn't it? That's
yes,
a big selling.
It is. And we spent quite a lot of time building the tool.
So, very good. So we've said it is important and it's changed. And you, Abby, start talking about user testing. One of the things that a lot of people look straight to do is they look straight to get into experimentation. Is that a good idea? Is that what our listeners should be thinking? Let's run loads of experiments tomorrow.
How much traffic have they got?
Yeah.
How much resource do they have? You know, how open are they to be proven wrong? What is the appetite within the company for it overall? Are they trying to do a hard selling? Do people understand what it is, you know, and how it might challenge assumptions, business assumptions that have been there for years and years and years? These are all questions that they should be asking before they even start to think about experimentation, because it is a big undertaking. I think to do it properly, it's not just a off-the-shelf solution. You know, there is a lot of areas that you have to focus on and research that you have to do, and making sure your setup is correct from the first outset before you even, there's no point in experimenting on data that is poorly collected, for example, right? You're proving absolutely nothing. So it is a huge undertaking, and many of the companies that I deal with, they're not necessarily in a position to do testing, right? They haven't got the traffic to do it or the resources. So,
yeah, you can do it on your homepage, but not much else.
So I guess the question, Abby, is and you know, I come from a relatively sort of small, medium enterprise background, and I completely concur with you that the resources are not always available to run loads of tests. But where do you then start on this journey to improving your performance? Is it analysis? Is it user testing? You know, what's the focus?
I like to say it's called getting your house in order, right? And if you can get your house in order, then, you know, if your traffic grows, you might well be in a position to start running an experiment. For me, it is basically finding all the things that any CRO agency will come up as your first prioritization list, right? When you first get engaged with them, they'll come up with a list of 10, 20 tests, and 9 times out of 10, these things are not necessarily things that need to be tested at all, right? They are usability improvements that you should just be doing. Mm. You know, if you have a button on a page that nobody can see, you don't need to run an A-B test to just, you know, increase the contrast on that so people might click on it. It is a waste of time and a waste of resources. So there is a whole library of things that, if necessary and are applicable to that website, you can start to improve. And then you measure it over time.
Right? Yeah. One thing I'd like to add to that is that you need to make sure that the data that you are getting from your analytics is as good as you can reasonably get it. It's never going to be perfect. It's an imprecise science by its very nature. But it needs to be solid and better than most setups in order to then start using it to drive other things.
Yeah, so you've got to be tracking the right things in order to measure the improvements over time. So, that is what I would include in the housekeeping part, is to understand that that is all as good as it possibly can be before you start working.
So I would give an example here of a large supermarket we've done some work with, where they have the Adobe Analytics, and they had not set Adobe Analytics up to record page speed. Because it was being monitored in the technical tool, therefore their view was they didn't need to record it in Adobe Analytics. However, that meant that any behavior that was driven by page speed was not captured in Adobe.
Thank you for that. I think we'll take a break now.
Maybe we should take a break here for a message from our sponsor, Swift, retail's leading solution for product workflow automation. Swift is designed to replace the in-house tools and spreadsheets retailers use to manage product workflow by bringing buying, planning, marketing, studio, and e-commerce teams together on a single powerful platform to launch products faster and more efficiently. Find out more at goswift.com.
Welcome back. I think as we've tried to do with all of our podcasts, I think you've come up with some very practical suggestions there, which is start with the bug fixes, start with the obvious things. And then there's some things that you simply don't need to experiment. What are the things where you think experimentation is worthwhile? Let's say I'm an SME. What are the circumstances in which it is going to be worth my while going to the trouble of designing options and putting them into place and testing with my user base?
I'd probably put them into two categories. Number one is it's a critical function of the website. For example, a checkout. I don't know. I would probably, if I had the chance and the right amount of traffic, I would be A/B testing changes in critical areas. The second would be if it's a particular bone of contention. Something that negotiation and meetings have not resolved through the normal methods, and you need to make a decision either way. That can be quite soul shattering for people if it doesn't turn out the way that they expect. But it's a way to put it to bed. So you've got the data there, it is proven statistically. that would be another area, another reason why I would be looking to A/B test something. But for the smaller companies, there really has to be a good reason behind it, instead of just, you know, willy-nilly pushing tests out for the sake of it because somebody thought something was a good idea. But yeah, for those two particular reasons would be why I'd be running an A/B test.
Yeah, I think the bone of contention, certainly from personal experience, is probably the area where you can't get organisational agreement. Some people think A, some people think B, and then some people think Z.
Then you're into our favourite HIPPO acronym, Highest Paid Person's Opinion.
Yeah.
Which Avinash used to promote many moons ago, where basically, yeah, the chairman's wife has decided that the look and feel doesn't work. When they're not the target audience.
I've had a few of those as well.
Fortunately, in my experience, it was normally me, so made things more straightforward.
It changed your thinking, right?
Absolutely.
So you went from having this opinion that you really, really believed in for whatever your reasons were, to being presented information and evidence to suggest otherwise, right? And that's the whole point of optimization, is to try and get people to challenge themselves and their own biases about things and be open to the, you know, possibilities, you know, differences that they weren't expecting.
I think that's a great place to build on here. So again, Abby, when we were talking earlier, you talked about the importance of understanding your target user and knowing that you were talking to them in the right way. How do you go about understanding their emotion? How do you go about understanding how they make decisions, how they grow to love your brand, how they make a choice between different products? How do you actually go about it? Because it's pretty complex getting into these emotions, getting into the brain.
Yes, it is indeed. And I've found that... Yes, you can run user surveys, and goodness forbid you should get AI to, you know, extrapolate the findings of those user surveys. I wouldn't recommend that to anybody. You have to go much deeper than that. And yes, you can run some sessions to get to know your users. But the thing, especially in a digital world, the best tool that I have found is to go underground, basically. So the internet is full of all sorts of different communities, right? And if you can find the communities that your potential users are residing in, of which there will be several, and if you sit and observe and listen and read what they're saying within these communities, you can really start to get a grasp of who your target is. And what, you know, from the customers that you already have, what makes them a loyal customer? And once you establish these sort of themes, you can then work on that within the brand to push those through in order to figure out who you're going to market to, why they're going to stay with you, and to sort of tweak the brand and make sure that that understanding comes through in the advertising that you're promoting. So that's another really good tip.
You're effectively doing underground digital ethnographics study.
Yes, exactly that. Yeah, I was trying not to use clever words, Scott, but it's exactly that. And I have taken it steps further than that. So if you can think of the old, you know, secret shopper analogy, right, where you go out to a store and I've done this. I was working for a company who was selling plants. I went to every single garden centre in Oxfordshire and I observed the people that were buying plants. They didn't know who I was, what I was doing there. As far as they were concerned, I was just in the garden centre on a Sunday, you know, doing my thing. But I struck up conversations with these people. I mean, these were a particular type of plant that they were buying. I was just asking them questions like any other Joe Bloggs. You know, they knew nothing about me or why I was there. I was just trying to understand who these groups of people were. And the amount of learnings that I got from just being out in the wild in a natural environment, having casual conversations with people, in terms of fruitfulness for the company, it paid dividends, you know, just for me taking time to walk out from my office, get some fresh air and go and speak to these people. And it was so very different from the sort of sessions that you'd have where you recruit potential, you know, people that might be coming in to buy your product.
Yeah, I've got a friend who is a professional panel attendee on any subject. Because he's got a friend who's a recruiter.
There's
probably something slightly unethical about that. But yes, I mean, I have to say, just taking your points on, Abby, at Heels, the head office was next to our biggest store on Tottenham Court Road. So if we had a particular bone of contention, it was pretty easy to get out on the shop floor, accost a customer, even get them to look at a website page, say, look, what do you think? Or can you see... Yeah. Can you see how to choose? Can you see the information you want here, and get instant feedback? It was fantastic.
It's great and enlightening, and I would recommend it to anybody, because the closer you can get to a natural environment where people are on this purchase journey that they're going through, the better. And sitting in a room with somebody staring at you whilst you try to perform a task, it's not naturally, you know, you're not going to get the real feelings, I don't think. It doesn't matter how good the moderator is. No. It's not raw.
If you're a larger corporation, then clearly you are going to be more remote. But there's a lot to be said on the whole sort of back to the shop floor piece, whether it's even back to the digital shop floor.
Absolutely.
Versus your
customer service department will give you plenty of feedback if you bother to ask it.
Oh, they will,
So I just want to move things on a little bit here. I mean, one of the reasons I thought the conversion rate optimization may be becoming obsolete is there's so much tech that you can put onto your website now that will claim that it can do the job for you, whether it's personalization, presenting everybody with their own personalized banner, whether it's search, whether it's merch. All of these tools would claim to be able not only to present your customer with the thing that's most likely to attract them, but also to optimize it automatically. In that context, and particularly with AI looming and apparently able to do anything, is there still a role for the CRO professional, the CRO process?
I want to answer that one first, because I think that... There's clearly a role for the CRO person to play, because AI is driven by data, but the amount of data that you need to feed an LLM is huge, and there are only very few companies that have the scale to be able to do that for their customers. Amazon is clearly going to be one. Most of the big supermarkets and so on will probably have enough. But actually, for the average organization, it's going to be really hard. So you're going to end up applying a generic AI understanding into your business, which is when it starts to go wrong.
But that may still be more effective than having humans.
Yeah, I
looking
agree.
At
I mean,
things.
There are places where, you know, for example, in merchandising tools, where a good merchandising tool will outperform the best human merchandiser by about 25 to 30%, and I've seen that so many times that I believe that to be a rule of thumb now. Clearly, trying to do that for ad banners on your own website or offers on your website, the machine will give you access to far more variants than you could possibly have, but it means that the machine has to make a decision about which offer to offer to which human. So the management or the e-com team are then no longer have control. Arguably that is a good thing or a bad thing. I think the jury's out on that at the moment.
Abby, what do you think about the rise of the machine? I mean, are people like yourself going to be out of a job in 6 months' time, or will the nature of the job change?
What do I think about AI? Well, I'm still not convinced it can get the right number of fingers on people when it's creating art. So
there is that.
I don't fear for my livelihood at the minute, and there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, AI is, like Mark said, it's only as good as the data it's getting to learn things off. Okay, and there's a whole different podcast about data privacy, how much access to data we have, So, you know, if it hasn't got a good data set to work from, then what it produces is not going to be optimal. And the only way that we can get around access to people's data is to build enough trust for them so that when they come to our website or app, they are logged in and we have their full permission for that data. The amount of times I kill cookie banners and reject everything now is, you know, it's astronomical. I probably spend too much of my time doing that, but that's just the sort of person that I am. The other thing about AI is it is an AI, right? It's not a human. There are circumstances when humanity is needed in order for a person to get from being a browser to being somebody who actually does the thing that you want them to do on the website. Chat bots who are there supposedly to help invariably just send people in circles of confusion, and I know from my experience
and
rage, I try to find the trap door in order to get through to a human, whether it's speak to human, human now, whatever it might be. I'll spend 10 minutes trying to figure that out rather than go in circles. And I think people seem to forget that if somebody is reaching out for help on your website or for your service, they have got to a point of critical mass, right? Whatever the problem is, they need it resolving now. And my banking app is a great example of that. I sent it a message and it said, yep, don't know what you need. You obviously need to speak to a human, but that's going to take 3 days, right? And this is banking, right? I don't want to wait 3 days for a response to something. I wanted to speak to a human. Another example of that would be I was making a birthday present purchase for myself. It wasn't an
happy birthday, by the way. Yeah,
yeah, thank you very much. It wasn't an insubstantial amount of money. Okay, for this, it was a piece of jewelry that I wanted to buy, and there wasn't enough photographs of the jewelry for me to understand whether or not I liked it from the side, if it was too high, whatever it might be. And this company actually had a phone number on the website, right? And when I rang it, somebody actually picked up. It was a human. And within 15 minutes in my inbox was a whole array of this ring in different angles and different lights on a human hand. It was the pinnacle of customer experience. And they got the $4,000 sale out of it, right, for this ring. I bought it. If that option had been an AI, it wouldn't have been able to do that.
Yeah, yeah, right? Absolutely.
They wouldn't have got the sale. There's no way I'd have bought the ring off the website as it was. I did point out to them they needed more imagery on their website because I'm an optimizer. What else am I supposed to do? But AI is not going to cover everything.
No, no, certainly. So, and again, speaking from my recent experience with Heels, putting human live chats onto our website was the single... easiest thing to measure the improvement in conversion and customer satisfaction. So I'm fully on board with that. I think the other, put my two penneth in, I think even when you do a CRO exercise of the traditional sort, you do need creativity. It's rarely a simple matter of saying, oh, move this here or change this color. It normally requires what I would describe as human creativity to think about the customer, think about their emotion, think about how they make a decision, think about what's important to them, and then represent it in a form that you can actually test it or you can actually implement it. And I've yet to see anything that will deliver that automatically.
Yeah, I mean, a human is going to have to generate a hypothesis that you then test. I have not yet seen AI generating hypotheses because you have to have this broader, you know, holistic understanding of the interconnectedness of all this stuff in order to generate a viable hypothesis in many cases.
Very good. Okay, so we're approaching the end of our time here. So it's the sort of classic final question here, which is we've got listeners out there. They've listened to us talk about CRO and how it's changed.
Just give them
one thing that they've got to take away from this. You've got to do this after you've listened to this podcast. Abby,
know your users. I'm going to say it because I think it's the most important thing. Because unless a brand can align who they're trying to sell with and understand them, they have got no chance of retaining those customers. And the way that I truly believe that retention is the way forward, right? We talked earlier about competition in the market and what the differentiators are. And for me, it's the salience between a brand and who your potential customers are. So truly understanding their wants, needs and desires, how they operate on your website, how you can make that much better for them. I think the key to all of it is really trying to get those customers and understand who they are and making sure that what you're selling is what they need. For whatever reason it is that they attach themselves to you, hold on to it as much as you can, because with acquisition costs going up, I can't necessarily see a better way forward and actually a more important way forward for companies to operate. And I think a lot of companies miss out on that. It's all about the big bang buck at the end of the day, right? But that's quite a short-term view far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Super. Yeah. And I think just taking on your point from earlier on is what you think you know isn't what actually is. So I think that was a very valuable point earlier on. Mark, what would you say? One single thing.
I would say against Crow, don't focus on the conversion rate. Focus on profitability and what it can do for you. You know, what that focus can do, because it means that you can look at a broader range of things. But it means that you need to look at all these things, and it means that you then have to make a choice about prioritization. It may come back to the fact that your problem is your conversion rate funnel, but I think that'd be fairly rare in these days. I think you'll find a broken customer journey somewhere or an edge case somewhere, which is actually really quite important to a specific group of customers. And by understanding that, you can then improve your performance overall.
Thank you. Okay, well, we've reached the end of our time. I'd like to thank you, Mark, for your participation today.
Thank you.
And obviously our special guest, Abby Huff from UU3.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much, everybody, for listening, and I hope you've enjoyed it.
Thanks to our sponsor, Swift, helping you get products launched online faster and more efficiently. Find out more at goswift.com.